Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, across all this wide expanse of land and sea, stretching from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands, flyover country, to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide. On ye olde internet, this is Coast to Coast AM, top of the morning. I'm Art Bell, and it's going to be an open line kind of night tonight. Let me give you a little idea of some of what I have planned. Coming up, let me see, Wednesday. I know that a lot of you have been waiting for it. So coming up Wednesday is Robert Ghost Wolf. And I'm looking forward to that one myself. Coming up Thursday is one that I cannot yet promote. I'll be telling you about it, say Wednesday or so, but it involves an earth-shaking announcement, is the way the guest that I cannot name right now put it. So we'll see. We shall see. If it is as my guest suggests, indeed it is earth-shaking. And there are any number of things that we can talk about this evening. Yesterday, I made another attempt on Dreamland to do a program on animal communication. And I don't know that it came off at all the way I wanted it to. And I'm really... It's strange. I've made several attempts on Dreamland to do a program on exactly that. And while it was interesting, it still really didn't go where I wanted it to go. And so if any of you, I am convinced, you see, that communication with animals is possible. And so if any of you have any comments, and oh, by the way, I know what else I want to do. It was about a week ago, somebody called me with a tape recording of their cat, which distinctly demanded in a voice, wet food versus dry food, and was able to say several other things. So if any of you have pets, short of parrots, that are capable of talking, dogs or cats that can talk, which you have captured either on tape or can provide for us live, usually a very difficult thing to do, you know, hold the phone down there, here, Fido, say something, and of course he's not going to. So many of you may have captured it on tape. I would love to hear it. The wet food demand was a riot last week, and I would love to see if we could get any others. But on the more serious side of pet communication, I do believe it is possible. I have cats, which I thoroughly believe that I am able to communicate with. A lot of people consider that to be purely Looney Tunes. Of course, they think I'm Looney Tunes anyway, so it doesn't much matter, I suppose. But I am very interested in this subject and somebody I could pursue it with out there. Yesterday's program was interesting, but still not down the road that I want to go. And one of these days in that arena, I will succeed. To give you an overview of what is occurring nationally with regard to surveys, talk radio remains the number one format. But nationally, talk radio took about, well, I'm not going to attach a percentage to it, but the ratings for talk radio in general in this last survey book went down. Almost, I say, across the board. There are a few exceptions to that, and I am thankfully one of them. Our ratings have either maintained their high level or gone even higher. The most recent example of that is near me, and I want to congratulate Alan Isenson and KXNT in Las Vegas. And I got a very excited call from Alan earlier today, and he said, Art, you're not going to believe the numbers. He said, in some hours, you've got a 19-plus share. And while that may not mean a lot to non-radio-type people, trust me, it means a lot. And we, from coast to coast, from the West Coast through the Midwest to the East are collecting double-digit shares. Now, that's good. For those of you who don't know, that's really, really, really good. Double-digit shares, you know, particularly in large markets like L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, and so forth and so on. Double-digit shares are considered very cool, and program directors and managers and stuff like that really like them. So it has gone that way for us, and not so well for a lot of the rest of talk radio across the nation nationally when you look at the picture. And I think the reason is the myopic concentration on the political world at a time when the political world is about as interesting as watching grass grow. But that's just my own personal opinion, and I do believe it is borne out in the latest numbers. We had a very interesting weekend in more ways than one. On Saturday, now that it's done, so I can tell you, Danion Brinkley came to visit, and we spent a quiet afternoon with Danion, or as quiet as one ever has with Danion Brinkley. He is the real McCoy. Danion Brinkley is a very, very interesting person. As you know, he has twice died. Danion, when you see him in person, you'll see that all of the hair has permanently been burned from his body. As you know, he was he actually was struck by lightning and caught on fire. Caught on fire. Clinically died. And Mr. Brinkley has, beyond any question, and I can attest to this personally, has powers, intuitive powers, that are a little bit frightening and can indeed read your mind. Now, while there is no way I can prove this to you, I suppose, in a way, perhaps we could do a program that would prove it to you. And maybe we will. But he demonstrated to my wife and myself that conclusively he could read minds. And I guess I won't go beyond that. But it is, I will tell you right now, it is a very unnerving experience. Danion is a very good friend. But to have somebody capable of looking at your thought process, believe me, is some kind of unnerving process. Anyway, after Danion left, the following day, we were struck by lightning. We had a whippersnapper of a storm come through here. And we were sitting in the living room. This was prior to airtime for Dreamland. And suddenly there was a bright flash and a giant pop. Boom! It sounded like from the other room, it sounded like, a big balloon exploding or something. And that took out one of our satellite receivers. So while the network and all of you can hear me, I cannot hear the network, which I suppose is okay. It will be replaced quickly, but the smell of smoke was throughout the house, and it was a pretty eerie experience, let me tell you. Pretty eerie. And then we had another very interesting visitor on Sunday, and I'll tell you about him. Let me pop through a few of the items that we might talk about. Republicans and the White House say they have reached a deal. They've actually reached a deal to balance the federal budget and cut taxes by about $90 billion over the next 5 years. Everybody involved is suggesting they are very pleased. The vote could occur as early as this week to confirm the deal. Massachusetts Governor Weld is resigning, hoping to be the new representative from the U.S. government to Mexico. Probably, though, over the dead body of Senator Helms, who doesn't think Weld is hard enough on drugs, and also has a pretty personal gripe against him because Weld, of all things, took off against Jesse not long ago. Not a wise idea, since Jesse holds the power of approval or even consideration of Governor Weld to assume that position. The Justice Department now says it made, quote, a major error in judgment, end quote, that could have violated Richard Jewell's rights when they interviewed him after last July's Olympic Park bombing in Atlanta. A major error in judgment. Said it may have deprived Jewell of his rights. So they continue to apologize. Bill Cosby says that he is going to take a DNA test to determine if he really is the father of a woman who was just convicted last week of trying to extort millions of dollars from him. And so I guess we will all know soon if she really is his daughter. There was a very interesting program on the Fox network that I have not yet caught called UFOs, The Best Evidence. No, that isn't quite it. It was something like that. Actually, UFOs, The Best Evidence was George Knapp's original title, but it was something like that. And it showed very clear, well-defined shots of unidentified aircraft flitting about. And you are welcome to react to that if you wish. I wonder if you thought it convincing. The following from the Associated Press Dateline Tokyo. Science fiction came much closer to science fact Monday. Brace yourself. When the Honda Motor Company introduced a two-legged robot that can walk, reconnoiter, even do simple fix-it jobs. The 6 foot, 462 pound P2 has two arms, two legs, a squarish head, small platforms for feet, and resembles a man in a boxy spacesuit. As in the U.S. Sojourner rover currently picking its way around the rocks on Mars, the P2 circuitry is sophisticated enough to decide for itself when to try to step over an obstacle and when to look for and try another route. Now, let me think about this. P2 weighs how much? 6 foot, 462 pounds. In other words, if he were to make a mistake and step on one of my little kitty cats, you'd have kitty cat mush. Anyway, it allows it to do uncannily human-seeming things, such as finding a worksite, pushing a cart to it, tightening a loose bolt there, all without continuous radio control. It only needs a simple initial command. In other words, begin. P2 can walk stairs, forward or backward. Oh my. Can keep its balance if given a shove. I wonder if it would shove back, even on a slope it has not been on before. Susumu Taki, a robotics professor at Tokyo University who led the Honda research team, likened it to the androids of science fiction. A truly humanoid robot was always considered to be just a dream or a product of fiction. But we have now proven it to be reality, he said. Unlike the most frightening robots of science fiction, P2 only does what it is told to do. It can be switched to radio control at any time or is simply turned off. Honda said in a press release that it will continue to make P2, which Taki began building over a year ago, more sophisticated and find more practical uses for it. Now, when you put this together, with the initiation of the first intelligent machine that we discussed last week, and you consider the application, and when I say intelligent, I mean sentient, a machine that can think, we are right there, and you put it in a robot body, you have a sentient being, don't you? And a pretty big, heavy one at that. Did you ever imagine it would move so quickly, this technology of ours? I have news of the first case of hantavirus being passed from person to person in southern Argentina. And somehow I am not surprised about that. Are you? Hantavirus, of course, generally was transmitted by rodents, generally in the Four Corners area. And now, all of a sudden, down in Argentina, they are finding cases of hantavirus being transmitted from people to people. This occurred in a hospital down there. And I think there is going to be more and more and more of this kind of thing. And I think it's Mother Earth kicking back, and we'll talk a little bit about that if you want. So anyway, it's going to be open lines. I've got a lot more material here, and I'll sort of dribble it out to you as the night continues. But we'll talk about anything you want. Go in any direction you like. Now remember, if anybody out there has a recording of their pet talking, I want to hear it. I thought that would be fun to pursue.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night, but you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
Linda Moulton Howe yesterday had an extremely, extremely disturbing report on Dreamland. We have previously covered Fisteria, which is something affecting fish in the North Carolina estuaries and now into the Atlantic Ocean as well. And she had a guest which said that there are now millions of fish and now crabs being caught with large, open, bleeding sores in that area, and now not just North Carolina, but beginning to spread up and down the coast. It is a very alarming, very serious situation, and, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about it. I probably should have canned that report so I could have played it back for you here. She interviewed the doctor who's been doing that research in North Carolina, and it is apparently spreading and worsening at a very rapid or even exponential rate. Maybe we will dig out that report, and I'll try to get it on the air for you. You really need to hear it. She sent me what she considers to be a little joke earlier today, which says, from the rapidly deteriorating environment to the crumbling cement walls around the phenomena, I am reminded of a quote from the writer George Leonard. Your resistance to change is likely to reach its peak when significant change is imminent. Let's hear that again. Your resistance to change is likely to reach its peak when significant change is imminent. In other words, your final resistance to change, whether it be an industrial-based change or whatever else, will finally change as you realize that something else is about to change. And I think she was probably referring to the hysteria that she reported on. I'm going to see what I can do. I'm going to try. I think I'm going to try and get some of that audio so we can repeat it for you. Anyway, coming up all night long tonight, open lines. I've got a fax here from SciTech, Ed Dames at SciTech, regarding the JonBenet Ramsey killer case, in which he describes the killer, but I'm not going to air it until I get an okay from him. I don't know if he meant this for air or not.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997. Take you back to the past on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
You know what you're hearing? This is called Ghost Dance, and it's a third in a trilogy from Cusco. Nobody on the planet has it yet, except me. It's a Puramac 3, folks. Called Return to Native America. And let me tell you, this thing runs about 5 minutes. One of these times I'll play the whole thing for you. It is absolutely incredible. Anyway, back to business. Dear Art, they showed a video clip of that robot tonight on CNN. Absolutely frightening. Wait till you see it. It resembled a man so closely you could swear it was a man inside a boxy spacesuit. The movements were fluid, not jerky. It even stepped side to side. They showed it climbing the stairs as well. You're not going to believe your eyes. Or this one, Art. I saw this robot clip on the news, and at first I thought it was someone in a suit. Close examination, though, clearly showed it was a machine. The robot moved with the gait of a human, had natural balanced moves going up and down the stairs. This was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. Don, in Arizona. So, I guess this one really has to be seen, and my wife saw it and mentioned it to me, and then I pulled the Associated Press story, but I have not, as of yet, seen it myself.
Take Coast to Coast AM with you anywhere on your mobile phone. coasttocoastam.com can be conveniently accessed on your iPhone and most Android platforms, which means that you are never without your Coast to Coast AM fix. If you're a Coast to Coast Insider subscriber, you can listen to the show live in the middle of the night or previous shows 24/7. Plus, you can browse all the great photos, videos, and news stories. Keeping up with Coast to Coast AM has never been easier with our Coast Insider service. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, this is John.
John, please turn your radio off.
Thank you, sir. Hold on.
Okay. We don't screen calls, folks, so have your radio nearby so you can get it turned off right away. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Art. I
all
get
right.
to turn you in between the drifts. I was wondering, first of all, if you're going to get a station around this area so we can pick up a little better.
We're working very hard on Pittsburgh right now.
Very good.
You know who came to visit me yesterday?
Terry Bradshaw.
No, good guess. Chris Ruddy. You know who Chris Ruddy is?
No, sir, not familiar.
He writes for your newspaper there.
Oh, okay. All right.
And he came and sort of spent several hours with me yesterday and is going to do a profile piece that will appear in your newspaper there in Pittsburgh.
Well, I sure wish they'd pick you up because it's really hard to get you in this area. I guess we're down in the valley. But what I wanted to ask you about, I remember you had Hoagland on a couple weeks ago. I tuned it in, and he said that there was some unaccountable weight on the Sojourner probe.
Well, there's about 600 pounds of fuel.
Well, would that equate to a P2 robot being sent up?
And more, yes.
And more. And another thing I wanted to ask you, if you're going to have Colonel Corso on again, I was in intelligence in Vietnam, and one of the primary goals of the intelligence unit is translation. And I was wondering if they had, like he said, the actual crash pieces, supposedly there were markings on there, and did the G2 ever translate these markings? And do they have a copy of the translations?
Yes.
Oh, they do?
Oh, sure. You know what it said?
No, sir.
Alien toys. I'm just kidding. No, I have no idea. Thank you very much. Consider if those were the toys of alien children, consider what the grown-ups might have been using. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Dave from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi, Dave. KXNT country.
Yes, sir.
People need to call Mr. Eisenson. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. They need to congratulate the station, all right? They did incredibly well.
Yes.
They clobbered everybody in sight.
Yeah, they're really doing good. I really enjoy this channel. I had a dream with you in it the other day.
Oh.
Or the other eight, you know.
Oh.
And, yeah. We were talking, and I asked you a question as to why you didn't do any shows on legends such as the city of Atlantis.
I'd love to do a show on Atlantis, but
or something like that.
But
you know.
Who do you get?
I don't know.
Well, see, there you are.
Well,
send me an expert on Atlantis, and we'll talk about it.
Or the Holy Grail, or mm-hmm. things of that nature.
Get me an expert.
All right.
That's always my response. I mean, I who do you call? I mean, you don't go to the Yellow Pages and look up Holy Grail and
right.
get a name. You just don't do that.
Or the Ark of the Covenant or anything.
Ark of the Covenant Institute? You don't get that either.
No.
Well, sure. I will try and do something on one of those.
Right. Somebody might know somebody out there that might have information on that.
I'm interested in any and all of that, as you well know. And so, yes, folks, I'll tell you what. If anybody out there is an expert on Atlantis or the Ark of the Covenant or any of the rest of these very interesting things, contact me by mail or email. I'm artbell@aol.com or send me a fax, 3-page limit. Anybody sending more than 3 pages, it'll never print out and I'll never see it, and it is a waste So otherwise, my fax number is area code 702-727-8499. 702-727-8499. A first-time caller line, you're on the air. Cheerio.
Good evening, Art. Richard in Vancouver.
Hi. Richard, get good and close to your phone. You're not too loud.
Okay, how's that?
Much better.
All right. Richard Hoagland, and July the 20th to July the 26th.
Yes.
Something interesting going to happen.
Yes.
Father Mordecai Martin's birthday was July the 23rd.
Malachi Martin.
Father Malachi.
That was predictable. I think he meant something else. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes, coincidence.
Actually, and your last listener wanted to know about the Holy Grail and the Ark. I'm certain Father Martin would probably know someone.
Well, he might. That's a good idea, actually.
Yeah, you might give that a try.
I might pursue that, yeah.
That's the only reason I called tonight.
All right, appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Now, I don't think that the Good Father's birthday was the event in question. That could have been predicted years ago. I rather imagine it was a loss of contact with the Mars lander on the 20th, and that's the event I think I would have held out. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Raymond out in Michigan.
Hello.
I have a question about a previous guest, but first of all, I just want to ask you, I think a couple of weeks ago you mentioned something about being interviewed in Rolling Stone.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the Rolling Stone interview should be coming out like next week, I think, or either next week or the week after.
Okay. I thought I missed it, and I wanted to pick it up. I'll look for that. I kind of stumbled upon your show accidentally in April.
Most people do.
Dialing around the radio looking for someone, I stumbled upon it. And you had a guest on, I think it was from the South somewhere, and he said he had shot like a Bigfoot type animal and he had buried it.
Oh, yes.
And he said that he was thinking of telling you where he buried it. Did he ever tell you?
He was willing to, for a while, he was willing to lead me to the burial site.
Yes.
But what happened is, during the course of the program, the audience managed to convince him, bless your little hearts, that if we did that, he would be charged with murder.
Right, yeah.
And so he kind of backed away from it. But initially, he was fully prepared to do that. It's too bad I left him on the air because people scare the hell out of him.
Well, as I understand it, he was afraid it was so human-like that...
That maybe it was a human or a malformed human or something. He began to doubt himself.
Yeah.
And realized the legal implications and kind of backed away.
Yes, you're right. I just wondered maybe he'd ever gotten in contact with you and anything ever came of it.
No.
Oh, well.
Nope, afraid not.
All right, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thank you very much for the call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Arch. This is Jim from Maryland.
Hello, Jim.
How you doing? I talked to you a while ago about, remember the aircraft carrier with the UFO?
Oh, I do, yes.
I was watching that Fox special tonight, and they had a plasma-type craft that really reminded me of what I had seen back then.
All right. Remind the audience of what you saw. You were on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, I was on the John F. Kennedy.
John F. Kennedy, and you were located about where?
We were in the Bermuda Triangle, actually. We were in the Southern Atlantic at the time, doing some operations down there.
And?
And the... all the communications went out, and we had heard there was something over the ship, so a few of us ran out to the catwalk and looked up, and there was this large glowing sphere hovering above the ship. And, of course, we went to battle stations, general quarters, and all that, and for about 20 minutes, the ship was shut down. Nothing worked while this UFO was above us. And I sent you a fax about it, and we talked about it one night back in June, and then I watched that show tonight. And they had that one glowing craft. They had a video, and I said, my wife, I said, that really reminds me of that.
Of what you saw.
Of that UFO that I saw, yeah. It's very similar. Oh, I just got a message on the computer from my friend Brandon. I said, go, Jim. He's listening to us, too.
I see.
this computer thing is really great.
So anyway, oh, it is.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it. So anyway, there should be others. There would have been, how many do you think would have seen the same thing you saw way back when on the Kennedy?
That's the funny part. It was, well, a lot of people heard about it, but only a few saw it. It was only about 18 people that saw the thing.
That's 18 people.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I've got the story up on the internet on my webpage, and it's on another web page. It's on several web pages.
I'll tell you what you do. I have ceased giving out web addresses on the air.
Oh, I know. It's too long. Anyway, I wouldn't want
to. But if you would email it to me,
okay,
I'll go take a look. And if it's legit, I'll announce it on the air. And
okay,
then maybe we can find some of the others who saw what you saw.
That's my biggest goal. That's my biggest goal is to find.
Well, I can help you out.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah,
all right?
That would be great.
Send
okay,
it
I'll do that.
All right, my friend.
All right, have a good evening.
Take care. Think about it. A major asset U.S. carrier, the Kennedy, with something massive hovering above it, even if it was only 18 above deck at that point who saw it, additional testimony would be very valuable. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Karen from Northern California. I'm just right outside of Reno.
Yes, ma'am.
And my dogs don't talk, but they do sing when you tell them.
You have singing dogs?
Yes. I did record it, too.
You did?
Yes.
Bless your heart. Are you going to let us hear it?
Yes.
Well, all right. What is your dog's name?
Okay, it's Casper, Dixie, and Ozzy.
Wait a minute. You have three dogs?
Yes. They're all Skipper Keys. There's two brothers and a sister.
Which one sings?
All of them start doing it. I just taught it to Casper once, and then he got the other ones to do it. They learn really quick. They're really smart dogs.
Wow. All right, let's hear it.
Okay, let me, hope I don't have it too loud. Let me know. I'll just listen in.
All right, go ahead and give it a try.
Here we go.
Sure.
I'm going to turn it up a little bit.
Yep.
Sing, sing. Yeah, sing, sing for Mom. Sing, sing. Sing, sing. Oh, pretty. Oh, sing, sing. Sing, sing. Oh, you're a good boy. Sing, sing. Sing, sing. Sing,
sing. I guess once you get them going.
Pardon me?
I say, once you get them going, I guess.
Yeah, when you get one going, they all start.
I didn't notice any specific harmony there, but...
Not really, but they think that's their kind of singing.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You take care. All right. That was pretty good. On my international line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello. Hi, Art.
Hi. Hold on a sec. Let me see if I can get rid of this echo. Where are you calling from?
Hythe, Alberta.
Okay, Alberta.
All the way in Canada.
Okay.
So I just called to say, this is the first time I've ever been on.
I understand.
But
surely you did not just call to be on for the first time. You had something to say, right?
No.
Okay.
I called about Richard Hoagland. He's any idea on what his special event that's going to be happening this week will be?
Well, it was last week, through the 26th.
Oh.
You're suffering the Haynes time compression syndrome.
From Roswell.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Live long and prosper. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Lisa from Washington State.
Hi. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Couple of things.
How'd you like the singing dogs?
Well, I like you, I did not detect any harmony there.
No harmony, but, I mean, they were trying.
Yeah, they were trying. We had a dog that we had for 11 years that did come back to us in spirit, I guess you could say. It was kind of eerie for a while.
Yep, this is where people begin to think you're crazy as a loon. But I'm telling you, I'm telling everybody, it happened to me. I believe it is true.
Oh, absolutely. He would. We would hear him on our deck at night. My daughter used to sleep out in the yard with him. She'd, like, in the summertime, she would get suntans, and the dog would lay down beside her. And she wasn't particularly thinking of him, and she heard him breathing next to her, and it startled her. And when she rolled over, there was an imprint where the dog would have been on a white, she was laying on a white sheet on the grass, and right before he had died, he was having a problem with fleas, and there were fleas on the sheet,
really?
And there was an imprint there. It was, she didn't want to tell me about it for a while. It was very, very strange, and it shook her up quite a bit.
All right, let me go straight to the bottom line.
Sure.
I've heard descriptions just like the one you're telling me. I've had my own experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This means to me that dogs, cats, other animals, maybe all animals, have souls. An existence. I don't know if maybe it's a word people are going to argue with when I say souls, mm-hmm. but they have an afterlife, as do we, and maybe repetitive lives, as we may, if reincarnation is real.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many profound questions that need to be answered quickly if what we believe may be true is true. I mean, if they have souls...
We shouldn't be eating them, right?
Well, that's certainly one immediate question,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was listening the other night on your program on Dreamland, and it was very interesting. I don't know that I necessarily believe in the reincarnation between an animal, for example, being
an
animal and then going to a person, and vice versa. I don't know that I believe in that interchange.
Well, I've heard about a lot of hypnotic regression into past lives,
mm-hmm.
and I have never yet heard of one that has regressed into, you know, a dog or a cat or a cow or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that would tend to give support to that concept.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But nevertheless, if these animals have afterlives
mm-hmm.
and have some sort of substance that survives their physical death,
mm-hmm.
then we need to rethink a lot of things about animals.
Oh, I believe so. And I also think it depends on... very much on the sensitivity of the owner of the animal to the animal. There are people all the time who lose their animals and don't necessarily say they feel their presence afterwards.
Sure.
I think each of us has a certain sensitivity to our animals, and you've said several times on the air that you are very much a cat lover, and we were very attached to our dog, and I think that just that attachment somehow... well, I'll give you an example. I would go to the grocery store several times, and if I had nothing for the dog, he wouldn't be on the deck waiting for me at the door.
Whoa.
But that dog instinctively would know when I would come home from the grocery store and I had bones or treats for him, he would be standing at my glass door waiting for
That's me. That's because he read your mind. Dear, I've got to go. I'm at the top of the hour. Thank you. Thank you so very much, and take care. Dogs know when you're coming home. And maybe they know when you've got a little treat for them and they're extra ready. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Network presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
You have no idea how long it took me to figure out where I could find this piece of music. My soulmate Ramona helps me out with this. I say, hey, I need that. I've got to have that. Find it for me. She'll end up going on a big long search and usually comes up with these things. But this one... know, this version of this song caught me and started going through my head again and again and again till I had to have it. And now, even when I'm not on the air, I just play it again and again until, usually till my ears bleed. Good morning. We're in open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. We're talking about a robot. You may have seen it on CNN in Japan that moves just like a human being and doesn't require radio control. You just turn it on and it goes. I'll read you the official story as we move through the night. We're getting a lot of reaction to that. People are freaked out. Anyway, back to open lines in a moment. Yes, also, we had some singing dogs. Well, they were trying to sing. They definitely didn't harmonize, but I think they were doing their very best. So if you have a dog or a cat, especially cats are cool, that talks and you have it on tape, get the tape ready and call me up. I may even open a special talking animals line. Maybe I ought to do that. Yeah, let me do that. Why don't we do that? A talking animals line. I will now hereby restrict what is normally ye old first-time caller's line, and we'll make it the talking animals line. So if you have a talking, now, not parrots. Everybody knows parrots can talk. So no parrots. But if you've got a dog, a cat, a cow, a tiger, any other form of animal that actually says something, and no doubt you've recorded it because it would be amazing to be able to play back for people. So if that's you, if you've got a talking animal, call me on my exclusive talking animal line. Open lines in a moment.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night. But you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. Listen on your way to work and again on the way home. Or listen to one of over 1,000 archived shows from the past 3 years. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You'll sleep like a baby, knowing you'll never miss your favorite guests and topics ever again. Remember, a one-year subscription comes out to only 15 cents a day. Sign up today at coasttocoastam.com. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
Okay, here we go into the land of the unknown, talk radio. Oh, and I've got several. Well, I do have a fax here. Jim Dilatoso, if you're out there, you should call me. Because I just got a fax. I can't verify it. It's from Karen in mysterious Sedona, Arizona, which says, Art, our Fox affiliate in Phoenix, at their 9 p.m. news, ran a story, get this, folks, with Jim Dilatoso concerning the Phoenix lights. He stated that he had been visited by, quote, the real men in black, and was supposedly told that some scientists at NASA believe the lights were in fact extraterrestrial and possibly a form of thought ball. They felt it could travel in hyperdimensional ways faster than light. The announcer at the end of the segment said this was not confirmed by an official at NASA. Do you think they are testing our reaction? Karen in Sedona. Ooh. So, Jim Dilatoso is a very, very interesting fellow who I have interviewed a few times. And I would like to confirm if this story is true. Jim, if you're out there, you have my private number. Call me and I'll get you on the air. And then I've got a number of faxes here about the robot. We'll talk about that. On my animal line, you're on the air. Hello there.
Yeah, hi. This is Daniel, and I've been trying to get hold of you for a long, long time.
Really? Where are you?
I'm in Bakersfield.
Okay.
Okay, I used to have a dog by the name of Blondie. She was a miniature collie, and she used to have a large vocabulary of words.
Really?
Yeah, she used to say things like, I want to go, I want to go. No, 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 no. I'm hungry, I'm hungry, I'm hungry.
And now, hold on.
And she used to howl it out.
Do you have this on tape?
No, I do not. But my aunt up in Idaho has one.
Really?
Yeah, she has a miniature.
All right. Listen to me.
Okay.
This line now is dedicated to people who actually have tapes or even want to let their animals say something live on the air.
Yeah.
So your story, interesting but secondhand. Get me a tape and we'll talk.
Okay. But if I could get a hold of my aunt, she has a dog that's actually alive that talks right now.
Well, then have it. I mean, her call this number and we will indeed get the both of them, I guess, on the air. Now, don't take advantage of that line. Now, this is only for people who either A, have recordings, or B, have their animal prepared to say something to his live, which is, you know, very problematic, of course. I would assume you have a tape. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Bob from Ohio. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good. I'd like to ask you a question. Are there any new updates on the alien interrogation or the video by Rocket Films? Is that available yet?
You know, I thought that we're just about at the release or past the release date for it. It seemed like it was supposed to be out by now.
Okay.
So I have no updates yet, but we can certainly get one easily enough.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, and I'll let you know when we know. I don't know. It's supposed to be out in video. Art, with regard to the 6'4" robot that weighs 460 pounds, I understand the Green Bay Packers have already made him an offer. Yeah, the Packers. Wonder how they're going to do this year. They've had some injury early on in preseason, but I'm a big Packer backer. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Ken in Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Okay, in the beginning of your show, you were talking about your demographics and ratings.
Yeah, we have in some... now I'm talking, of course, about my time slot.
Okay, last Thursday night, I had a chance to see Captain Joyce Riley at one of the hotels here in town.
Oh, yes.
And Joyce asked how many of 200 people, the place was packed of about 200 people, how many people listened to Art Bell, 80%, how many people listened to Lou Epton and Chuck Harder, about 80 to 90%. So all three of you were definitely...
Listened to?
Yeah, you're definitely running head-to-head. You're doing a great job. I have a question. I had a chance to talk to David John Oates tonight.
He'll be on later this week. I'm sure he told you.
Okay. He didn't tell me that, but one of the talk shows here that carries your show, I had a chance to talk to him. I have a question. He mentioned something about NASA. A NASA spokesperson said something in reverse about the planet Venus.
Absolutely, yes. I did a whole show on that, sir.
Yeah, that there's somebody, that there are people living on there. Now, I got a question, and I want your undivided opinion about this. How could there be people living on Venus if it's true that the temperature, surface temperature, is about 900 degrees? And when I brought this up on the astronomy chat room of a popular bulletin board here in here in Las Vegas, and I mentioned your name, everybody says, well, Art Bell's a nut, Art Bell's a crackpot, Art Bell is this, because everybody believes that Venus, it's way too hot.
Well, number one, Art Bell didn't say people lived on Venus.
No, I didn't say that.
That came as a reversal.
No.
Number two, it is rather arrogant of us to assume that all life forms are exactly as human beings. In other words, flesh and blood based... for example, you might come upon a life form based on an entirely different substance. What do I know? Yes, that was one of the reversals. There's no question about it.
But is there any documentation, any proof to prove that there could be life on Venus?
No. Don't you think that would have been big news if there had been?
Well, there's a lot of things that are big news that never gets reported.
Well, that's for sure. So I don't know about a undivided opinion. My opinion is it was a valid reversal. But again, to imagine that only a human being, which survives in a very narrow temperature range, would be the construct of life on another planet or in another system is rather arrogant and myopic-minded, isn't it? There might be all sorts of life forms that survive in different ways. On my animal talking line, you're on the air.
Animal talking line?
Yes.
Art?
Yes, yes. Art, do you have
I'm calling for, I just had a question.
No, can't take it. That's my animal talking line only. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello. Goodbye. East of the Rockies, you're on the air, top of the morning. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, turn your radio off.
Hi, Art.
Good first step. Yes, hello there.
This is Bill. I'm calling from Schererville, Indiana, just south of Chicago.
Yes, Bill.
I had a comment about the a video that was on Fox tonight. When you get a chance to check it out.
Uh-huh. What were your impressions? Was it really good, undeniable evidence?
I think it was. I mean, I really do. They did a good job of portraying many of the things they were showing. There was one in particular that had caught my attention because earlier in the day I was listening to an earlier program of yours from June when you were talking to Doug Ruby about crop circles.
Yes, yes.
And part of the footage that they had showed this evening on the video was from Brazil, I believe. I may be incorrect, but when you see it, you can take a look for it. And the craft that they were showing was flashing various different shaped features as it was in the air. And one of the crop circles you had mentioned that night with him was from the one from Stonehenge.
Yes.
It had just gone up on your website at that time.
Correct.
And it was eerily familiar to the crop circle, some of the shapes that the craft that they had showed on the video was flashing.
Hmm.
And I thought it was pretty interesting to see that, since I had just seen it today also. So you might want to check that out when you see that.
All right.
When you get a chance to see the video. But otherwise, I think it did a pretty good job. I think you'll like it.
What do you think of the idea of robots? Apparently, we are on the edge of having sentient robots. That means aware machines that move as humans do. Good idea or bad?
I don't know. That's an interesting situation. That's a tough one. I think it's got both its good and bad points. I mean, for the sake of science, I think it's a good thing.
It would mean you could have a servant. It would mean it would do all your physical work. You wouldn't have to toil anymore.
Yeah.
It would do all the rotten jobs, wash dishes and all that sort of thing, wash your car.
Right.
You can sit there on the couch, watch TV, and say, all right, car time, go wash the car.
Yeah, even that has its downside because then you start to get tempted to get too lazy, I think. But, you know, I think it's definitely worth looking into.
Pastor Bradley, who faxes me every now and then, a PhD himself, a Jesuit, wrote the following. Dear Art, with regard to the announcement concerning the robot, how long until someone goes to turn off one of these robots and its hand reaches out, stops the person, and says no?
Yeah, always the fear of the robot turning against you.
Something like that, yes, thank you. Imagine that, folks. You reach out to throw the off switch, and it goes, no. Grabs your hand, firmly, not crushingly yet, but says, no. You will not turn me off. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, good evening, Art. This is Pete in Portland.
Pete in Portland.
Yeah, I wanted to say I've got good news and bad news, but I think I've got bad and worse news.
The world is always full of that. What is your news, Pete?
Well, the first part is that about 10 days ago, a man in southwest Washington State, a bit north and I think west of Vancouver, Washington, which is just across the river from me, died in the hospital from hemorrhagic fever caused by hantavirus.
That's bad news.
Yes, he contracted it.
And if you add to that the Argentina story of the fact that down there they now are proving that the hantavirus is transferring from person to person.
Very worrisome. This man had vacuumed out a mouse nest in his house using a vacuum cleaner and wasn't wearing a dust mask or anything, and they advised us that should you need to clean out a mouse nest, you should use rags soaking in chlorine bleach. So, and we're not safe here in Oregon because, of course, mice can get into boxes of cereal and whatever on trucks and come across from you know, manufacturing processing.
Not something you'd want to find in a box of cereal. Oh, not at all.
Well, you know, they get out and then they breed and pass their stuff on to the mice down here in Oregon.
I know, but I mean, imagine pouring your Wheaties, right? And sticking up from your bowl, perhaps either prior to or after you've added the milk, would be a furry little tail. On my Talking Animals line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is Janet from Hotchkiss, Colorado.
Hi, Janet. How are you?
I love you. I'm calling in the voice for cats.
Really?
I live next to a lot of ranchers, and they border the town.
Yes.
And I've been witnessing they're killing I don't know how many cats over the years.
Yes.
And they're bragging about it at the local coffee shop.
Well... That's horrible. Listen,
horrendous.
This is a line open only for people who have tapes of or real talking animals. Do you have one?
Oh, no. I was trying to get across.
No. I appreciate your call, but this is now a special line. Only if you have a recording of or an animal that talks should you call the following number. Otherwise, do not call. Area code 702-727-1222. Normally, the first-time caller line now, restricted only to people with recordings of animals talking or the real thing live. That's it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, Art, it's Vince in Chicago.
Hello, Vince.
Yeah, that was a really interesting show Friday night with Richard Hoagland and company.
Yes, it was. The geologist, Mr. Nix, Dr. Nix, actually, was quite convincing.
Yeah, I thought he really did a great presentation, Richard, and I'd like to ask you a few things about that program. You know, you had that report that night from Phoenix of some strange lights that were in the sky.
They were searchlights from the opening of a bar. We had that on the air. Did you not get that part?
Yeah, I got that part, but I thought that was kind of left dangling, like it wasn't sure if it
it was confirmed.
Oh, so it wasn't anything unusual?
It was very unusual lights because they split out and came back together again. You know, Phoenix is kind of on a hair trigger anyway, and you get that kind of event going on in the sky and people freak. But, yeah, it's confirmed as search lights.
Okay, so there's nothing strange there.
No, not there, but back on March 13th, it's really strange, especially when you look at what Delatoso is said to have said. Now, I can't confirm that right now. I've got to talk to Mr. Delatoso.
Yeah, that's strange. You know, I didn't get a chance to ask Richard, but, you know, the thing about the, I guess Larry Hunter's out in Giza, or he was out in Giza looking over the Great Pyramid there.
Yes.
To see if there was this ceremony that was going to be going on.
Right.
I really find that kind of, I don't understand what the heck, you know, Richard Hoagland had said that there's some high-profile people that were in the pyramid due to this secret dig, and I just can't understand what that's all about. Do you have any idea?
Yes, I have an idea. I don't understand it either. It has to do with Masonic ritual, and frankly, I can't give you details except to say that it is Richard's contention that events at Giza, dates and things going on at Giza have driven the NASA program, very specifically have driven the NASA program. So you would have to listen very carefully to his show to understand that, and I'm certainly not the right guy to explain it. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art. How you doing?
Wait a minute. This is my Talking Animals line.
Yes.
You have one?
Well, yeah, I have a Blue Point Siamese.
Yeah.
Well, actually, she has me.
Well.
And she talks to me.
And what does she say?
Well, I don't know what she says, but sometimes I wonder whether she knows what I say or not.
No. You're missing again. Do you have a recording of your Siamese?
Well, unfortunately, things are always done on her terms, and I can't get her to do it now.
So, in other words, she only talks to you at inconvenient times when you have...
When it's convenient with her. I was thinking about getting it, trying to record it sometime and make
sure. All right, do that, and when you get it, be sure and call me back. Come on out, people. Don't misuse that line. I'm going to start screening it so we get the real animals here.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
We're talking about robots and all kinds of different things. There is a robot that Japan has just turned out that moves just like a human. We have a lady on the phone, and I don't know if this is going to work. It's always difficult at best when you try something live, but she claims her cat, what is your cat's name?
Allie Cat. It's a barn cat.
How long have you had Allie?
7 years.
7 years. And Allie can say?
Milk.
Milk. Now, naturally on cue, Allie is probably not going to be able to say it, but...
No, she's done it all her life. She eats dry, slim, fast.
Yeah.
She was bottle fed.
And this is not a tape we're about to hear, is it?
No, this is actually the cat.
All right. You're going to have to try to get close, whisker close here, or it's...
Okay.
All right, give it a try.
Allie, come here. Hey, milk.
Milk.
Could you hear her?
I heard one milk.
Do you want me to do it again?
Sure, let me hear it one more time.
Okay. Say milk. Allie, milk. Two short ones. Could you hear that?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Oh, Art, you made my night. I can't believe I made you laugh.
Oh, you did. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll see you later. Yeah, that was a definite milk. Oh, gee. All right. We talked about, we had a dreamland. I said this earlier on communication with animals yesterday, and I suppose that's what's driving me to this. And I never have quite gotten it down the way I want it. That is, and I've tried a show on communicating with animals, and one of these days I'm going to get the right person. It's all going to click. It was very interesting, and it was very provocative and raised a lot of provocative questions, but it still wasn't quite the show I wanted. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
How's it going, Art?
Pretty well. Turn your radio off.
Okay.
That's it. Off, off, off. And where are you?
I'm calling from Atlanta.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes, sir.
WGST.
Yes, sir.
Planet Radio.
You know that.
Yep.
I just want to commend you for the talk you did last year with Courtney Brown, Cosmic Voyage.
That was something, wasn't it?
Oh, man, it was great. And, I was listening to you last week when you had Daniel on the air.
Yes.
And me and my cousin was just so happy taking a drive. We was talking about Major Ed Daines, and next thing you know, he's on the air, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Synchronistic, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll give you something synchronistic if I can find it here. I've got a fax from Ed Daines, mm-hmm. and I asked over the air whether I could read it, and he sent me a fax saying, yes, I can. It concerns the... Ramsey case, the Jean-Bernard Ramsey killer case.
Right.
And so here, I've got a you want to hear a description of the killer?
Go ahead.
All right, the following was sent to the district attorney, Adams County, Colorado. Sir, the following information amplifies the arguments and augments the descriptive data contained in the SciTec June 30th, 97 initial report. 1. The killer is a male, age 32 to 38 years, 5 feet 10 inches to 5 feet 11 inches, blonde or reddish hair, green eyes, generally trim physique. 2. The killer's current workplace, an industrial site which lies in a generally east-northeasterly direction from the murder site. This facility is a large plant with a stack where acrid chemical smells are present. What appears to be a rotary kiln is in operation at this location. Other key information. The killer often commingles with two other persons in this work environment, but particularly closely with a short, dark-haired, pot-bellied, middle-aged male. This person may be aware of, or in some manner, participated along with the crime. Respectfully, Ed Dames, President, SciTec. So that's pretty specific stuff, folks.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. Going once. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wanting to refer to the man who was on the JFK.
Yes, the aircraft carrier.
Yes, sir. I was wanting to know what time he was there. What year.
Were you there?
Yes, I was, but I'm not sure if the same years were correct.
Did you experience anything like he talked about?
No, the only thing I experienced was we had several aircraft downed within a short period of time.
Okay, well, obviously, you know, he was talking about a UFO, a large glowing UFO above the JFK.
Right.
So I guess we would have to wait and hear from him with regard to when that was. On my talking animal line, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, this is John in Scottsdale.
Hi, John.
And so far we've only really heard one talking animal.
Well,
I've got one here.
You do. What what kind of animal?
She's a dog, and her name is Laika, which I'm sure you will know the history of that dog's name. But anyway, Laika says mama, and if I can just get her to cooperate right here. Sit down, baby. I'll have her say it for you.
All right.
Sit down, sweetie. Come here. Say mama. Say mama. Say it. Say mama. Say it. Come on. Say mama, baby. Want some? Say mama. Come on, say it. Say it. Say it, baby. Come on. She whispered it. Come on. Say it.
Wow.
Say it, girl. Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Say it, girl.
Yeah, I heard it.
Well, I mean, come on, say mama. Say mama, Micah. Say mama. Yeah. Say mama, baby. I gotta give her one.
All right, you're wait a minute now. Your dog's name, let me get your dog's name straight again.
It's Laika.
Laika.
As in the first dog that went in outer space, the Russian dog.
Yeah, oh, yes, all right.
She kind of resembles her.
Well, I definitely...
That was a good one.
That was a good one, yeah. All right, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Take care. There you go. There's the dog said mama. So we've had a dog that said mama, and before the night is over, and of course we've had a cat, before the night is over, you just never know what we might run into. That was a fairly clear mama. That's pretty good. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I'd like to talk to Dr. Doolittle. I mean, Art Bell.
Yes, at your service.
Hello, sir. How are you tonight?
Just spiffy. What can I do for you?
Well, I wanted to make a suggestion for tonight's show since you're just letting things go freeform.
That's what I'm doing.
I know, but this is my suggestion. And
I'm listening.
It's been a while since I've heard it.
I'm listening.
Truth or trash?
Isn't that what we're doing?
Well, I don't know.
most of my open lines are truth or trash.
Right.
And your phone has got all kinds of noise in it.
Is it better now?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that, sir.
It's all right.
Have you seen the video Extreme Measures with Gene Hackman?
I have indeed.
Did you like it?
Yes.
I thought it was really good.
I'm a serious movie fan. I don't miss much.
I know. I'm usually the one who calls you up, probably among many other people. But anyways, I just wanted to suggest that if you hadn't seen it, I thought I had a lot of stuff to think about.
Oh, no, it was great.
And it was also just a good thriller, too, if you would look at it that
way. No question about it. Doolittle signing out.
Yep.
All right.
Last? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
That's all right. I thought I was signing out. What else?
Oh, the last thing I'll tell you, I don't have it on tape, but I do have a dog that talks.
The only ones that count are the ones they can prove here.
Well, I didn't call you on the animal line. I was just saying, my dog does say I love Howard Stern.
Does he?
Mm-hmm. My cat says Baba Booey. Have a nice night, Art.
Yeah, goodbye. I bet. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello, hello. Goodbye. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, this is Tim from Omaha, Nebraska.
Tim, extinguish your radio.
Okay, I'm out of the room now. Okay, hi. About a while back, I was in a fishing trip with my buddies, me and about two of my friends. And we were sitting back, and one of us was getting wood, and the other two of us were still fishing, had our lines in the water and everything.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, it was a perfectly bright, clear night, stars out and everything.
Yeah.
And backfire and everything. And a blue light. It was just blue. Lit up everything around everything. There was no clouds. It couldn't have been lightning. Two of us seen it. About an hour gone by, I suppose. No time. We couldn't recall for any time at all. One of us didn't even see it. The other guy didn't see it whatsoever. He couldn't recall what we were talking about. Probably about 4 hours earlier in the day, there was a crop circle. I'm not sure if it was a crop circle. It might be what you want to call a crop circle. Out in the middle of this field, because we had to walk clear around a creek, probably about a half a mile to a mile radius away from the lake. And out towards just an abandoned field. There was a great, great big circle out there, and there was no explanation for that whatsoever. Nobody's ever walked back there, I'm sure, besides us. And I was just wondering if maybe you know what anything like this could have been or something.
No, of course not. I would have no way of knowing what it was, other than as you described.
Yeah, have you ever heard anything like that maybe before? It was just like a blue light. It came out of nowhere. There could have been anything that, it, you know.
Were any of your camping mates devoured, eaten in any way?
No, there was two of us that we both seen it. There was no actual beam. It was just a blue, like almost like an explosion, and it just lit up everything around us. It was like almost day, and that we lost about an hour's worth of time. It just
I was about to say that. I have heard of this blue flash before, and in every time that someone has described it to me, there has been a time event. People have been blown backward or forward in time, so I can substantiate it that far.
Okay.
Okay, for real. I mean, people have gone into buildings and elevators, there have been blue flashes, the elevator opens, and they're in a different century.
Nothing like that. It's just...
Well, who knows? When the blue flash occurs, it may mean that some sort of opening or change has occurred. It's just that simple. Let's see what we've got here on my animal talking line, talking animal line, whatever. You're on the air.
I'm sorry, I got the wrong line.
All right, bye-bye. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Yeah, my name is Johnny.
Johnny, you must be talking into a tin can. I can't hear you. How about changing to a real phone?
Can you hear me?
A little.
Okay. I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes, sir?
They don't carry your show out here very often. I have to pick it up out of San Antonio, Texas, off of some kind of skip.
Well, that's one way to get it.
Yeah. Do you all have any, are you broadcast on any shortwave frequencies?
Well, the first thing I would suggest that you do is check 1260 WIBV there in St. Louis. That would be the first option. And then move on from there in case you can't copy them. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is your talking cat, talking animal line, right?
It is, yes. Thank
okay,
you.
Well, I
what,
got
what have you got?
Well, I got a cat here.
Yeah.
That can say just about anything.
Already, I'm beginning to doubt.
You ready?
I'm listening.
Okay, ready? Okay. Okay, say hi, Art Bell. Say it. Hang on. 1 second, okay?
I know.
Okay.
This is not, it's never easy.
Say it. Say it. Go ahead. Say it. She's not going to say it.
Oh.
Sorry, Art. She took off. I had the phone was ringing before, and...
And she was uttering all... She was saying, Art Bell, Art Bell, Art Bell, Art Bell, but the moment you connected...
She was talking. I had you before, but then
stage
I didn't
right.
get through, so...
Yeah.
I'll try again. Thanks.
All right, goodbye. I don't know if I believe that or not. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art. Tell me, when you guys were talking about... Oh, this is Ricky from New Troy, Michigan, by the way.
Oh, yes.
When you guys were talking about the magnesium bismuth parts...
Yes.
Can you tell me what shape those things were in?
What shape?
Now, these are different from Art's parts. Art's parts were aluminum?
No. No, no, no. The Bismag was the second shipment, sir. These are Art's parts.
And have you tried to electrically...
We've done all kinds of experiments. If you'll check my website, you'll see the scanning electron microscope cross-sections of them. You'll see full pictures of the parts.
But one particular test, have you tried to pass electricity from the magnesium to the bismuth?
Yes, we have.
And was there any electrical conductivity or an absence of that?
There was... What they did is 500,000-volt electrostatic charge tests.
I was thinking maybe that...
And we actually have moving video, or we did, I don't know if it's still up on the website, of this part taking off in the air.
I'd like to say something about James von Prague. You're familiar with him?
I've heard of him.
You've not seen his little act that he does?
No.
Well, it's he for the 18 million people out there who might have heard of him or seen his little act, he communicates with ghosts. He asks information from the spirits.
Yeah, but how does he receive it back? So we all can hear it, or does it come through him?
It's just through him. Incredible.
I know, but I have such a problem with that.
It's an incredible act how he does. But wait, here's one flaw in his little game. He says that he can receive information from the ghost, as I said. He can make requests of the ghost for information. But he also says the ghost can affect electrical devices. He'll talk to one person, and he'll say, you've been having trouble with your phone last night. Yes, it was off and on, off and on. He goes, yes. Well, that's your dead grandmother. They can affect electrical devices. So my question is...
Yeah,
Mr.
but why would somebody's dead grandmother screw with your phone?
Wait. That's not my point. He says that... my point is, if he can make requests of ghosts and that these ghosts can affect electrical devices, then could he request of a ghost to affect an electrical device under controlled scientific tests
right.
under conditions? And I wrote him this letter... I have his address, and I asked him this question, and I got back a an order form for his tapes and videos and things.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to say something else in addition, if I could, about the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes.
There, I called up before, and I guess you didn't think it was too interesting, but here it is again. All the eels of the world go to either the Devil's Sea or the Bermuda Triangle in order to reproduce. When they get there, they swim down to incredible depths, and they're never seen again, living or dead. So there are...
Now, how do you know this?
Oh, it's in all the eel books. If you read about eels, it's a scientific fact. They never actually say Bermuda Triangle or the Devil's Sea, but they give you the locations on a map, and if you check maps against the Devil's Sea / Bermuda Triangle.
Well, eels are electric many times. Why don't you have James Van, whoever, see what he can do with one of those?
Eels are not electric. The electric eel is not an eel at all. It's a fish.
Oh.
It's related to the catfish.
Well, it's an electrical device, right?
Well, as are all atoms, so anything comprised of atoms is an electrical device, yes.
All right. Well, I now remember why I didn't think too much of the theory before, because I don't know either, but I appreciate your call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
I was just calling to let you know I've got a singing dog if you want him.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Let me hear him.
His name is Bart. He belongs to a friend of mine named Clancy. Here he is. Might take you out to the end of the hour.
All right.
It takes him a little while to get warm up. Can you hear that okay?
Well, yeah, I hear it, sort of. I don't hear any dog.
You're listening to the Bozo Truckers Network. But I hear not a dog. I didn't hear any dog.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Well, he's on there.
Doing what?
You know how hard it is to tune a slide Doberman.
Look, Roseanne did better with the national anthem.
Oh, yeah, you know, and I can see why.
I mean, that was terrible.
Well,
that was
okay.
That was the most... It offended. That was actually offensive. It was so out of tune
and discordant. Hard to tune a slide Doberman.
Well, I couldn't pick out the Doberman part of it. Now, I heard the strumming, but I didn't really hear anything that resembled a... Anyway, maybe some of the rest of you heard the Doberman in there. I really didn't. All I heard was a discordant mess that was hard to listen to. That reminds me of why I originally didn't like country music.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
You're not going to believe this. Remember that fax I read a little bit earlier about Jim Dellatoso? The person who said he had a visit from the Men in Black? Well, they may not have been the Men in Black, but, they were in the family. I've got Jim Dellatoso online. In just a moment, he'll tell you who he is, what he does, and we'll probably get a pretty good idea of why he got his visit.
Take Coast to Coast AM with you anywhere on your mobile phone. CoastToCoastAM.com can be conveniently accessed on your iPhone and most Android platforms, which means that you are never without your Coast to Coast AM fix. If you're a Coast to Coast Insider subscriber, you can listen to the show live in the middle of the night or previous shows 24/7. Plus, you can browse all the great photos, videos, and news stories. Keeping up with Coast to Coast AM has never been easier with our Coast Insider service. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
All right, let us go now to Tempe, Arizona, where apparently there has been an occurrence. Jim Delatoso is on the line with me. Jim, thank you for taking time out. You're in a lab in Tempe, right?
I'm in the world-famous Village Labs.
Would you fill the audience in, please, on who you are, just in case, you know, some are not aware. This dates back to the March 13th light event over Phoenix.
Well, I'm the president of a company called Village Labs. We've been in business for about 25 years, priorly under two names, Computer Graphics Lab, a computer graphics design company, and the Village Recorder, a world-famous rock and roll recording studio.
Oh, okay.
Both places have been noted throughout their history, each in their own industry, for innovative work. The Village Recorder, home of Steely Dan, Supertramp, Fleetwood Mac, the Eagles, and many rock and roll bands.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And Computer Graphics Lab, we were the innovators in flight simulator and classroom engine maintenance simulators for DARPA and movie colorization technologies that we developed, and supercomputer installations and design technologies, and we work a lot in the aerospace industry. So with those two families of tools available since the late 70s, I've been interested in and participated in the testing of many pieces of evidence that seem to be part of the paranormal.
Okay. And in that regard, you got an opportunity to get your hands on the footage of the now famous or infamous lights over Phoenix on March 13th.
That's right. I got my hands on, because it happened in my own backyard. Usually I test evidence for other investigators, ranging from Marina Popovich of the former Soviet Union, Jaime Masson in Mexico.
Sure.
All over the world, I've tested some of the more infamous cases. You never hear about the ones where I find the hoax. You only hear about the ones where someone has some story to sell or tell.
Sure.
About the most recent sighting. So when the Phoenix lights case came about, and a number of the investigators, including Bill Hamilton, that I have a high regard for, got involved in the case, I was asked to, and did indeed, test the video and the pictures that came about as part of the evidence.
And what did you find?
Well, initially, as I do in most cases, I set out to find out what it's not, like fingerprints on a doorknob. You have fingerprints of an unknown, and you attempt to match it to something that is known.
So you look frame by frame, and you're looking for fraud, of course.
Well, we look for fraud. We look for hail bop. We look for planets. We look for stars. We look for airplane lights. We looked for flares over and over and over again.
Especially flares. Let's stress that.
Well, especially flares. And one of my colleagues, Michael Tanner, and I have been working together for about 20 years in various UFO cases. Most of them never reach the public.
Yes, sir.
But Michael handled investigating and following up on witness reports that came to us from Peter up in Seattle.
Peter Davenport.
Peter,
right?
Davenport. Mm-hmm. And MUFON, to the degree that they had collected names and followed up somewhat, there were some controversies at the beginning about how the investigation should be conducted and what was a real investigation versus a club effort.
Okay.
And we decided to proceed in our own way,
and investigated the evidence as it was available, as well as following up on claims that were made by MUFON and other investigators and the National Guard and what have you. We came to the conclusion that there was no possible way that these could be flares, flying in the face of MUFON's contention that they were flares, some misreports at the beginning that the National Guard had said that they were flares. Later, Captain Eileen Benz released...
All right, before we get to that, let's get down to how did you conclude that it could not be flares? That's really important because I know what's flashing around Phoenix right now, as do you.
Well, there's two ways to do it. First is optical analysis. You have video, grab it in the computer, and compare apples and apples. You compare the unknown objects to, and their signature. It's kind of like in audio, where you can look at the wave shape. A violin note is different than a clarinet note.
Of course.
An A note is different than a C note.
And a flare is different than whatever this was.
For a number of reasons. Flares have their own characteristics in the way that they burn. They sputter. They are not evenly spaced in their brightness in the, so to say, a corona. It's called a sigma. And the evenness of the way that the light is distributed around the object. A light bulb, for example, has the tungsten inside, has the glass bulb itself, and has the glow or the corona that is around it. Three different things to look at.
Flares also light up the ground, don't they?
Some of them light up the ground. They generally light up the ground. Some are designed for heat. Some are designed for light. But generally speaking, they will light up the atmosphere. They will light up the ground. They each have their own purpose. But I've been involved in optical science for a long time. Even though there are many who say that I don't have a company, I'm not qualified. Anyone who has ever actually been to Village Labs knows that we are a very sophisticated and highly regarded facility. It is well within our means to test the detail of flares and to know that the red, green, and blue component of the lights are out of phase at different places around the light, knowing that the optical characteristics of flares sputter ever so slightly, and that when you look at two thumbprints of a human, they are different from each other, but when you look at the difference between a thumb of one man and another, they are very different, and the thumb of a man and an ape, they are extremely different.
Sure.
That is the difference between a flare and these unknown lights.
That much difference.
That much difference.
So it is not ambiguous.
No,
these
absolutely not.
These simply were not flares.
They simply were not. And
right. As you know, there is a, what is it, a Captain Benz, I believe her name is?
Yes, and I have a very good rapport, a very good dialogue and discussion with her. The day that she released the information that she had discovered that the Maryland National Guard had probably released flares 35 miles away from the targeted sighting point in Phoenix, she discussed with me the fact that she wondered if it was going to be all over the world, that the flares were now going to be embraced as the explanation for the entire 2.5 hours of sightings.
Which indeed is exactly what has occurred. I've heard it from Phoenix again and again and again. I've been I got calls from the Arizona Republic the other day.
Yes.
And I said, for God's sake, don't let this be the explanation that goes out to the world, because I know it's going to happen. I said the same thing to him.
I had him over here on Saturday.
And?
Discovery Channel was here for 4 days.
Right.
Doing a detailed one-hour investigation of the investigation called The Anatomy of a UFO Sighting. And they talked to everyone from Richard Motzer, who you've talked to before, to radio and television personalities, to witnesses, to pilots. And they were exposed to the television, radio, and newspaper press who had reported on this, and Richard was over. And it wasn't until we came to the lab and actually saw the testing itself that he knew, and it was blatant and obvious, that the flares, as videotaped by other investigators and by Channel 12, compared side by side with the unknown objects, were not even remotely close. The difference between a violin and an oboe.
Sure.
Not just the difference between a C note on a piano and an A note. I mean, drastically different.
Okay.
So we had to put a lot of time and attention. I'm a very busy person. I have a lot of things to do in our day-to-day work, but I address the flares and the entire Phoenix Lights issue because it was viewed of such incredible significance by others around the world, and in my studies, I started seeing things in the unknown light objects that I have never seen in my optical analysis of anything before.
What would those be?
Well, the clarity and the purity of the light, and most specifically, the way that it went out. It did not go out like an artificial light, like voltage going down. It did not sputter and go out like a flare. It went out like an iris closed and blocked the light.
Just like the closure of your eye, if you were just going like, to close your eye. Boom,
that is
gone.
Correct. That is correct.
Okay.
And I talked to a friend of mine, some of you may know of, David Froning, I've known for about 15 years, who is the director of advanced propulsion studies at McDonnell Douglas, and I know him quite well. And we talked about it at length about a month after the incident happened, and we decided that it wasn't a topic at the moment that would be meaningful to anyone in the UFO clubs or to any of the other investigators we were working with, and that there were some things that we were going to look into. The flares issue we saw was going to be an item that MUFON was going to argue about, whether they were put up to it or they were jealous and doing it on their own, but it was going to be an issue, and that we had to have definitive proof that these were not flares.
Okay.
We had no reason to publish a report on all of our findings at that time, even at this time, and to provide it to people who are still immersed in their own view. You know, I have met hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of UFO investigators over the years, and or more.
Can I have one other question with you,
yes.
Jim? Barry Young, who's a talk show host there in Phoenix during the day.
I've never met him, but I've heard he talks about me.
He talks about me, too. Has said again and again that he, for example, had a young astronomer who focused his telescope for a period of time on these lights and saw airplanes.
He was here Saturday night.
Got bored and focused elsewhere. And that was the explanation. Now, of course, they're coming back and saying flares. Was it airplanes?
It is possible that that young man saw airplanes that night, but there are some things that don't add up.
In other words, what's on your tape? Can you definitively say that what's on your tape?
It was a different event.
A different event. So
there were a number of events that night. Mitch Stanley looked into his telescope at between 8:20 and 8:40 that night. If he saw airplanes, 9 of them, in a V formation, it was a radical formation. Airplanes do not like to fly. It is not safe to fly. It is not traditional or conventional to fly 9 in a V.
Well, not only that, but as far as I know, you don't fly airplanes over a populated area like Phoenix without having a transponder on.
And without having a very specific and absolute reason.
That's right. And you recall the testimony of the two tower guys who say there was nothing there.
There was nothing there. And Peter Gersten filed Freedom of Information Act. We got reports that there were no airplanes of that nature flying. Now, Mitch Stanley might have seen something.
But not what you've got on tape.
Not what we have on tape. That was a different incident. A V formation of 9 planes, each with 3 lights on it.
You know, it's very difficult to focus a telescope at 10, 15, 20, 30,000 feet.
You betcha.
An astronomical telescope. Mitch may be very adept and capable, and he seems like an astute and honest man. And I believe, even though he shrugged and has hands in his pocket a lot, body language notwithstanding, that I believe that he will stand by what he says he saw. Now, A-10s or other airplanes, said they had straight wings, would not fly in a formation of nine with lights on. They would fly three by three.
Not only that, but they would make, nine of those would make a whole lot of noise.
Yes, and we stored that and said, let us say that anything that people reported may turn out to be true later, so let's save all information as true. Let's build a mathematics truth table and see what incident could possibly have come about that would account for what everyone claims that they saw. Meanwhile, I'm making my calls in and around to people that I work with on a daily basis. I still have a lot of aerospace collaborators, even though we work in the entertainment business too, and I discovered that people were calling me back that ordinarily I work with in supercomputers or parallel computers or aerospace only, and were asking about the Phoenix lights. People high enough in, up in those companies that I knew it was not just curiosity, and they knew from my other work that we know what we're doing at Village Labs, and if we are looking into the lights and we're making statements about things, that there is merit to it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started getting phone calls from Texas and phone calls from Florida and phone calls from Maryland, went on for about a week, I knew that we were onto something of interest.
Yes.
When one particular day I had a trio of gentlemen come visit me and friendly.
A trio of gentlemen?
Yes. None of whom I knew.
Dressed in what way, announcing themselves in what fashion?
They announced that they were looking for Jim Dellatoso and had some questions for me. They were on their lunch break. They were dressed like people who go to work at a number of the government facilities here in town, not in suits. When I discussed all of this with my friend Jim Schneebelt of Fox Channel 10 here in town, who was really perturbed about the national press last week because he saw them himself, he was perturbed about the flare stories. He came over for a visit, and I recounted to him when I showed him this 25-page document that I have and gave him a copy of, we talked about whether or not it would go on the air. It was in his words that he used the men in black. To me, they were astute, forthright, precise, stern, firm, capable, and curious.
And curious.
They were wanting... Go ahead.
All right. We're at the bottom of the hour. Hold on a moment, all right, Jim?
Yes.
We'll take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with Jim Dellatoso, who apparently has had a visit, and we'll try and get the details of that regarding the lights in Phoenix.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997. Network presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
My guest is Jim Dellatoso for the moment. He works for Village Labs, or is Village Labs, I guess. And he investigated the Phoenix Lights, what they are and what they are not. And what they are not is flares. He had a visit. We'll ask him all about it in a moment.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night. But you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
Once again, from Arizona, here is Jim Dellatoso. Jim, these guys came to see you.
Yes.
Three guys. And what did they want to know? What did they say? What were your impressions? I mean, you gave us your impressions of them.
Yes.
What did they want?
Well, initially they wanted to, I think, size me up.
Okay.
Spent a couple minutes doing that. They came right into the computer room, which I thought was a bit bold. Of course, we have a pretty young thing as a receptionist out front.
Uh-huh.
And she's not very good. Wasn't the appropriate person to stop people from going into that room. And it was okay that day. I mean, we didn't have anything. We don't have secrets going on out in the blatant open computer room there.
Right.
So they asked for me and recognized me, and they immediately said, you know, that they would like to see a video of the Phoenix Lights. Did I have it available?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm kind of busy right now. Could we talk a little bit? And the leader of the three said, well, I think it would be good for you for us to talk right now. And I said, okay, what will we be talking about? And
at some point, Jim, did you say, you know, a natural question, who are you guys?
Not yet, because it was the normal banter, you know.
Okay.
In the mix between the entertainment business and the technology business that we do, a lot of it has to do with the way that you set up the immediate relationships.
Okay.
And at that time, I didn't know who they had gotten through to get to me.
Okay.
So, you know, and right at this point, I mean, we're under 1 minute.
It's kind of like getting a phone call from somebody you don't know, but you're supposed to know, I guess.
That's right.
So you feel your way around it.
They looked vaguely familiar, and they were comfortable enough without being aggressive with being in there that it's like people that come backstage at a concert.
Okay.
I can tell people that know how to not trip over the wires.
Mm-hmm.
So it was lighthearted but very precise.
Mm-hmm.
And I dealt with it like someone telling me that, you know, the Moody Blues are getting back together again and I need to pay attention for the show. In any case, I said, okay, what is it about? And he said it would be to my advantage to listen.
All right.
I said, okay, let's talk then. I said, what are you interested in? And he said, we've heard that you've been testing the lights. And I said, yes, I have. What are you interested in? And he said, what is its optical pattern? Do you have the original tapes? Uh-huh. And I said, yes, I have them in the computer. He said, well, can we look at them? And I said, well, tell me what this is about.
Right.
And he asked me a name. He said, do you know HP?
Uh-huh.
And I said, only on the telephone, but I do. And he said, well, are you familiar with his paper on 0.0?
energy and the studies at the lab? And I said, yes, we've talked about that. We're in we're both in the same project right now.
Right.
And he said, okay, have you seen this paper? And he handed me a paper. And I said, yes, I have seen this paper. And he said, one gentleman in particular, said, well, what do you think about it? And I gave him my comments about it, and he said, I understand that you have Steve Erskine here. Or not Steve Erskine, Steve Ellswick. Steve Ellswick was the founder of the Tesla Society about 10 years ago in Colorado Springs and has recently moved to Arizona and joined Village Labs.
Okay.
We talked about that for a couple of minutes. They were seeing how deep into the dialogue about that I could go. And they perceived that I could go real far. So immediately another paper was produced. So what do you think of this? Handed me a paper that was called Intergalactic Scenario, authored by the same person who had authored the prior paper. And I said, well, I can't really read and digest this right now, as I saw the diagrams and the complexity of the mathematics that was in it. And he said, we'll wait.
We'll wait?
We'll wait. And I said, okay, give me a couple minutes. This is pretty hefty stuff. And he said something like, well, I'm sure you can deal with it. So I went to my upstairs office, escorted them back into the kitchen lounge that we have, and
right.
Gave them someone to give them coffee and keep them there. And I went upstairs and glanced over the paper. I did not read it. But I saw page by page what was in it, saw that it was all about the Phoenix Lights. The diagrams that were in it were specifically the Phoenix Lights, and it made reference to the Phoenix Lights on every page. And I came back downstairs and said, you know, what is this about?
Right.
And they said, you should continue your work, and these are specific areas that we want you to look into. And I said, well, under whose authority?
Right.
And he said a really unusual thing. It was under yours. And I said, well, under mine? I mean, is this a contract? Am I going to be paid to do this? Is it my personal interest?
Logical question.
Yes. And he said, you'll be contacted. And I said, well, you've got to be joking. I mean, this is very powerful what you're wanting me to read here. And your contention is that the person who wrote this earlier paper is the person who wrote this. And he said, then another one of the three said, yes, he asked us to bring it to you. And I said, okay, well, I'll just have to look into this and study it. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do next. And I said, am I a candidate for something? And then there was some other dialogue that we shouldn't discuss here that made note of the fact, I made note of the fact that they already knew things that I was surprised that they knew. And I said, there were some other things that were said, and my final comment was, well, where should I discuss this?
Uh-huh.
And the third gentleman, who hadn't spoken at all, said, you'll know. I said, that's very ambiguous, I'll know. He said, well, you've handled things very well up to now. So, and I didn't know in what context that was. UFO research? But you know the degrees that these have happened, because I've been involved with this for a long time, and in certain circles where my work is regarded, I later assumed that they knew of that, and then subsequent phone calls that I've had too indicate a very high level of interest in the fact that I have access to and have the original tapes.
So you think you're dealing with the government?
I think about that a lot. I deal with the government every day. I deal with DARPA. I deal with the Army. I deal with contractors of the government, such as TRW.
Yep.
And there are so many stratas and layers of the government, and when we would diagram those out, we would come to the conclusion that the octopus and the arm and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission are themselves changing at the same time that all agencies of the government now have people who grew up in the 60s who are in positions of authority.
So you were dealing with somebody of a... this group was representing some sort of official organization of some kind.
I am certain that the person who asked them to come see me, who is at the very highest levels of NASA, is well aware of the fact that the Phoenix Lights, for whatever reason, by whatever other agency, has become an icon, must now be dealt with by those other agencies who compete with each other. If the understanding, the knowledge, the wisdom that goes along with this entire affair is to be perpetrated.
Was there any threat, subtle or direct? Was there any... they certainly gave you direction. Was there any threat, any intimidation?
I would not characterize it in that way. I felt that they knew that I knew how to proceed. In fact,
in other words, everybody understood who they were talking to.
Everybody understood each other.
Huh.
And I've been in some very...
So what are you going to do?
What we're doing right now. I feel that, first of all, I feel that Captain Benz is not an adversary, but is an ally. I don't think she made anything up. I think she has delivered information about the flares, and they're very well, it may have been flares many miles away.
But that is not what the Phoenix Lights were, and of course that's what's being used by everybody who wants to explain it away as flares.
Explain it away.
I bet you I've seen a million stories.
Right.
Flares explained, usually the headline says. Or,
yes.
Or UFOs explained as flares, blah, blah, blah.
Right. And some people will use that to their advantage to explain it away. And others who have developed a sense of critical thinking will know that that is merely a temporary diversion.
You know, interestingly, Jim, one of the stories I read that said UFOs explained as flares, at the bottom of it said that the captain, I think it was the captain, or whoever
yes.
it was who talked about the flares, said these were flares designed to remain airborne for 5 minutes.
Yes.
Now, the Phoenix incident, nearly as I can recall, was 106 minutes.
That's correct. With a minimum of 4 separate events, and by multiple witnesses, we can claim evidence of 10 events. Remember, eyewitness reports is sufficient evidence to put a man in jail for life.
Sure.
In a UFO incident, even pilots that we have on the ground who reported what they saw in the air and claimed that it was not a legion of airplanes or flares are now discounted.
I understand.
So the paradox here is that the more reliable the witness, the more intense the claims of chicanery or fraud.
That's right.
So the benefit in all of this is that, and I use the word again, critical thinking is being developed in people. You know, I've been in labs 2 o'clock in the morning where they listen to the Art Bell Show. They don't have 60s radio. They don't have 80s radio. They have the Art Bell Show, and these are places that we all hear about. These are government labs with 90% of the people at night weren't even born when the Roswell incident happened.
Right.
And these people think. They don't react. They think. And there is a blanket of subtle consciousness change that is happening. I'm not going to go into religion or metaphysics here. Everyone has their own patterns and beliefs as they should have. But a consciousness about what to believe and what not to believe. And the claims of flares has only intensified people's yearning to know what it really was.
Sure.
No one really believes that it was flares.
Well,
like the crash
it
test
sure one. Isn't for a lack of newspaper story claiming
yeah.
newspaper stories claiming that, and ridicule emanating from certain people who do talk in Phoenix and so forth and so on.
Yes.
All right, Jim, I want to thank you for relating this to us. I guess if anybody has encountered the men in black who weren't necessarily in black, it was you. And if you have any follow-on or follow-up, I sure would appreciate a call or a fax or
okay.
whatever, and we'll get you on there. Very, very interesting.
Okay, and anyone that wants to contact me can do so by email.
Okay.
Right. I love Mason Williams, by the way.
Oh, well, that's good. So do I. Thanks.
Very
Thanks
good.
Very much, Jim.
Thanks again. Okay,
and
bye, Art.
Have a good night. All right, so there you have it. Jim Delatoso down in Arizona, who apparently got a visit. Gee, how synchronistic. We just did a whole show on the Men in Black. What would you have done? No, they were not flares. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Art Bell.
Yes.
Oh, this is Mike in Fresno. I called last week about the you know, the identifying with the brimstone situation.
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah, and you know, this man that was just on interviewing, it's funny because you know, he talked about a studio in which a lot of musicians came out of. And I'd like to talk about, like, some beginnings and endings that took place in 1995 that are, you had the beginning of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which, by the way, that's a pyramid, okay? You had the end of the Cleveland Browns in that same town. You also had the Cleveland Indians that were in the World Series with Ted Turner team playing, you know,
and they
called themselves the Tribes.
All right.
There was a radio station in St. Louis.
You've got to try to connect all this for me right
okay,
now.
There was a radio station in St. Louis. This
yes.
is where I'm getting down to right now.
Okay.
That was inducted or cited for their years of servicing up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they unveiled it in 1995.
Yes.
And their format is Real Rock Radio.
Yes.
It's the Casey. They're owned by Emmis Broadcasting now. They were started by Shelley Grafman in 1961.
Okay, but I don't understand your point yet.
Okay, well, the idea is, like, when you take St. Louis and you take, say St. Lou, and you take that is and you put it in front of real, that's Israel, all the tribes of the children of Israel. What I'm coming across with is with Richard Hoagland, who
you
had all
You sound
these...
like Richard Hoagland.
Huh?
I said you sound like Richard Hoagland.
Oh, for goodness sake. With all those connections, everybody's saying, well, what's the big thing? Or what's the big event? I go, hey, just putting all those connections together is a big event to me. You know, that's a phenomenal combination of things that he put together there. And
you have a radio on, don't you?
I sure do. I'm
that's
sorry.
Very confusing.
But I just think, you know, like I say, I also sent you a fax, too, last week. I don't know if you saw it or not, and it had to deal with, like
you know,
in St. Louis.
I've really got to tell you that I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, it, basically...
I mean, anybody can play with words and say
oh, I can understand
Lou,
it.
Israel. I mean, we could do that until the cows come home, but how
exactly.
can you prove that it has any meaning?
Exactly. Well, for me, it
for
certainly
you it
does.
Meaning.
I mean, there
well,
was events that took place in Cleveland that marked beginnings and endings.
Right, but for all this to have meaning for anybody else, you've got to be able to impart to them why it means something, why you're not just grasping words and putting them together to have meanings that mean something to you and nobody else.
Right. Well, I'm saying is there was events that took place that measure beginnings and endings in Cleveland, Ohio, which is kind of a biblical type or a theological type.
Cleveland is a biblical place?
No, I mean, I'm talking about events that, you know, like I say, they say beginnings and endings.
All right, well, this is an ending because we're at the top of the hour, and I have no idea what that man just said to us. But sometimes that happens with Richard, too.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 28, 1997.
Tell you what, in a moment, we're going to the Hawaiian Islands for a very special reason. It has something to do with Story Musgrave. That should keep you hooked.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night. But you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. Listen on your way to work and again on the way home. Or listen to one of over 1,000 archived shows from the past 3 years. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You'll sleep like a baby, knowing you'll never miss your favorite guests and topics ever again. Remember, a one-year subscription comes out to only 15 cents a day. Sign up today at coasttocoastam.com.
Get a new view of the world with Coast to Coast AM.
First of all, I want to just thank you for bringing everyone out here to Cornucopia of just phenomenal knowledge. I don't know of anyone else that I've ever listened to in radio that just fills my brain and stimulates me. But, you know, I was listening to the show, and I thought to myself, do you think, George, the common citizen such as you or I really has any hope towards the future of any privacy or anything else?
I think we do. I think eventually so many people will see the light, see what you see what I see, that eventually they're going to say enough is enough. And I think that we do have a future, and we're going to win in the long run. It's going to be bumpy along the way. It's not going to be easy, but we will get there. That's my take, and you know what? As long as I can continue on the airwaves and tell people this, I shall.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues. Courtesy of Premier Networks.
a lot of people know that last night the Fox network ran UFOs, the best evidence on videotape, and I have on the telephone Dick Allegre. I think that's right, isn't it, Dick?
Dick Allgaier.
Oh, boy, I screwed that one up, but good.
Yeah.
Say it again for me, Dick.
Allgaier.
Allgaier.
It's been said Allegre, Argyle, Allgaier, but it's Dick.
All right, that's Dick. Good. Awesome. Dick, we'll do Dick. Dick, you work for a TV station there in Honolulu, right?
Yeah, the ABC affiliate.
The ABC affiliate.
All right, before we get to that story, real quick, I got to tell you something, that your show has really changed my life and opened up my consciousness so much. I used to, driving home after the news, have my radio tuned to the news station and listen to it coming in so I could be up on the news before I got to work.
Sure.
And one night, it was on, and I was listening, and here were these two guys talking about people that had been abducted by aliens. And I went, snicker, snicker, this is crazy. And I listened on the way home, and I thought, this guy's making sense. It was an interview with John Mack.
Oh, yes, ago. John Mack.
And I went home, and it was the first time that I had ever stayed up all night to listen to a radio show. And I was amazed that this guy was making sense. And here was this great interview. I went out and bought the book, and I started listening to your show, and you've opened me up to so many new ideas. And I just want to say to your critics two things. One, first of all, Art Bell is true to good radio. I mean, it's good, interesting, fun radio. That's the first thing. That's the most important thing that you're true to, right?
It is true. I mean,
it's
if you
good, entertaining radio. But in there, with some of the wild stuff, is some true stuff that's very important.
That's right. As a matter of fact, we had some on from Linda Howe a little bit earlier.
Yeah, that was chilling.
So, Dick,
today,
anyway,
I was sent to do a story on astronaut Story Musgrave. He's a well-known astronaut, an incredible figure, and he was speaking, giving a presentation here in Honolulu.
Right.
And I went and watched his slide presentation, which was just fabulous. He has just stunning slides from space, shots of the Earth, coral reefs from space, volcanoes, shots of him repairing the Hubble telescope that just take your breath away. He shows galaxies forming and exploding stars, these
wow.
amazing Hubble pictures. And it's about an hour-long presentation, and he just has the audience captivated. Toward the end of the show, up pops a picture of a gray alien, an artist's rendering of a bug-eyed gray.
Uh-huh.
And the audience kind of, a couple snickers, a couple gasps, and just kind of quiet. And Dr. Story Musgrave, astronaut who's been on 6 missions, very credible person, says, these guys are real. They're out there. I guarantee it.
He said that?
He said that.
To a whole audience?
To a whole audience.
In front of a camera?
Well, I wasn't rolling at that time. He's giving the same presentation tomorrow. I may go take a camera and actually tape that. I'll have to see if I can get away and do that.
I wonder if he'll repeat it.
I am sure it's part of his standard thing. So I went and interviewed him after the presentation. He was signing autographs for the little kids who were there, and
sure.
he has a pile of pictures, and he signed, you know, here, Story Musgrave. And it's kind of like the Jimmy Carter story, you know, your listener who said that he kind of got Jimmy Carter's attention. Here I have to butt in because I only have a certain amount of time. I have a TV camera, and I said, Dr. Musgrave, excuse me, may I get a few comments from you? I've
sure.
got to get my camera back. He says, sure, fine. So he's signing autographs. I knelt down beside him, and I first of all asked him about the environment. What's his impression of the environment from looking at it at space? And he told me, well, some missions it's clean, some it's incredible dirty, and on and on and on. And then I said, that was very interesting, what you said about aliens. You seem to be out on the leading edge here. I know that NASA is saying there might be microbes on Mars. But what about what you said about the aliens? He said, well, I've been saying this for 30 years. He said, you know, 30 years ago, if you said something like that, people would distance themselves from you. 15 years ago, there were some people who said, well, we need more of you that are willing to go out like this. And today, and he just kind of let it hang there. So then while I had him on camera, I wanted to ask him, because he seems like a very honest man, I wanted to ask him face to face if he had seen anything alien. You know, he was on STS-80, was he not?
I think so, yes. I think that's
correct.
Yeah,
he said in his biography. I said, Dr. Musgrave, I know someone with a top secret clearance who is affiliated with the military who had occasion to ask a general who had been on some space shuttle missions, General, have you seen anything alien up there? And the general kind of gave him a wink and a nod and said, well, I can't confirm or deny anything. I said, Dr. Musgrave, have you seen anything alien on the shuttle? And he kind of changed a little bit. He said, well, I've seen a lot of interesting things. You know, ice crystals can behave very erratically when they're floating in space and we fire our thrusters on and on and on. But he said, no, I've never seen anything alien. But I just got the feeling that he really would have liked to have
said something. Dick, have you seen the STS-80 yet video?
No, I haven't. I'd love to see it. I wish I had a copy of it because I'd take it there and play it for him.
I could probably arrange that. I have a copy of it.
I don't know how long he's going to be in town.
Right.
He's been here for a while. I didn't know I was interviewing him until an hour before today. That's the way TV news works. But describe for me what that does. If I get a chance to go to him, it's over a South American city, right?
That's right. The operators of the outside cameras on the shuttle the city, when you start, it's panned back, and it's nothing more than a dot. I mean, a city from space is sort of a little pixel, a dot. And they are able to zoom in, and they zoom in on this city. And at that point, you can see the city lights. It's taking, maybe a fourth of the total a screen. So it's, you know, you're seeing the city quite well, the lights of the city. And the camera sits there and waits. And in about a minute, something flares and flies up from Earth into space. And I don't know how to describe it, except it was some sort of plasma shot or some sort of craft that really took off. It was obvious that whoever was operating the cameras on the shuttle knew this event was about to occur, where it was going to occur, and when. And it is so startling. And then that's only part of it. The rest of it concern objects seen near the Terminator, you know, when they're going either from light to darkness or darkness to light, that simply defy all explanation. And I would love to sit down with somebody like Story Musgrave and have him talk to us about these ice crystals, particularly the one that flew up from Earth from the city. So,
I'll tell you what. I'll try to get to his, if I don't have a different assignment tomorrow, I'll try to get to his presentation. And for those of you in Hawaii listening, it is at the Bishop Museum tomorrow at noon. He'll be giving the alien stuff aside, just his shots from the space shuttle are stunning.
But he really puts up a shot of a typical gray or an alien and says
folks, these guys are real. I think it's part of the gradual process of getting us used to this. I think it's this gradual revelation.
Well, that's not so gradual. Dick, I really want to thank you.
It's interesting whenever I call into your show, because I'm pretty well known here in Hawaii. I get a lot of people. You have so many listeners here. And I tape a half-hour show called Health Matters, and I interview doctors. And one of the doctors was in makeup, and I was talking about eye surgery and what we're going to be talking about. And he said, hey, Dick, do you listen to the Art Bell Show? Yeah, I do. And he says, yeah, did you call in a few weeks ago? I said, yeah. And I thought that was you. Can I talk to you? And he pulled me aside and he goes, you know, you got to be careful who you talk to about this. And he's a respected doctor, and I'm a respected newsman, and you have to be careful. But he took me aside and said, yeah, I believe all that stuff about the aliens. And he and I got to be friends. We actually were trained as remote viewers together.
Well, Dick, one of these days, my wife, who I'm sure you know, was born on Neva Beach there, we'll come back. We'll come to a Hawaii, and when we do, we'll get together with you.
I'd love to talk to you. You know what I'd love to do with you is do an interview with you, and I would allow you to come. We have a computer editing system called Avid, which is a non-linear computer editing. I'll show you how it works. You can help me edit the story. I'll let you approve it.
In other words, you won't leave the best part of me on the cutting room floor, huh?
No, I won't. I'll let you actually watch the process. Of course, it will only be 2 minutes, so there's that limitation. But our editing system, I think you'd love to see. But if you get out here, I'd love to meet you.
Done deal, Dick.
I really enjoy your show. It's the best. I get on the Internet and cruise the Internet, do some work on my computer, and listen to you all night. My wife works late at night, so I really enjoy it.
Take care of my friend.
And if I get a hold of Story and I'll put those questions to him, I'll get the tape to you.
And pass my fax number to him.
Okay, you'd like to interview him.
Sure.
Okay, I'll do it.
Thank you very much. Take care. Well, there you are. You heard it from a reporter. And hey, these guys, they're real. Not really subtle. You will hear more about the STS-80 video. I've got it here, and I've contemplated many things. I think that there are copies of it available at locations on the Internet, AVI files and so forth. I've contemplated putting something up myself or hunting something down. It is the most remarkable, jaw-dropping video that you've ever seen in your whole life. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Hi. Sorry, I'm a bit nervous, you know.
Sod-eyed. Where are you?
Oh, I'm Justin. I'm in Joplin, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
So we don't pick you up on any local stations here anymore, so I'm listening to you out of WLS in Chicago.
Good old WLS.
But anyways, I was calling regarding the robots. You were talking earlier about in Japan, the humanoid-formed robot thing?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I was wondering, have you ever read any of Isaac Asimov's robot stories before?
Of course I have.
Okay. Well, you were mentioning, you know, that, you know, the intelligent computer or whatever, and I was figuring, well, if this technology is becoming more apparent, then I figure that maybe people should, you know, take another look at you know, like, for instance, Asimov's, like, three laws of robotics or something like that, you know, in the future because, sorry, I'm kind of losing my words here. Well, you understand what I'm getting at, do you?
Yes.
Okay, but because you were mentioning the, if you were trying to switch it off and it says no, I figure...
Grabbed your arm and said no.
Yeah, I figure that they should really start planning this out again, you know, because like you said with the cloning, if the technology's there, they're going to go ahead and do it. And as soon as the technology's available for them to make a sentient robot that can act on its own, somebody's going to do that too.
Depend on it.
And
I think we are on the horizon of that right now, sir.
Oh, of course, of course.
All right, I appreciate the call. The Japanese have built a robot which moves with the fluid motion of a human being, can climb stairs, can operate basically on its own, once turned on, or be operated by radio remote control, either one. Here is, earlier in the program, I asked somebody to pretend you were the president giving a speech announcing to the world that alien life was real. Somebody has sent the following. Outline of the president's speech to the nation, revelation of alien visitation.
My fellow Americans, let me take you back to 1947. America had just emerged from the largest, most brutal war in mankind's history, but we had a tenuous peace. The Soviet Union had clamped an iron curtain on Eastern Europe and had ambitions to conquer the world. We had only one thing that held them at bay, the atomic bomb, the only bomb group that could deliver that weapon of peace. President, that weapon of peace was based in Roswell, New Mexico in July of 1947. Something indeed did crash near our bomb group at Roswell. It was something incredibly advanced. We at first were not sure if it was Soviet. We just knew it was something beyond our own technology. For this reason, for the good of the nation and the world, we clamped a lid of secrecy on. Secrecy can be good for our country. Think back to the Manhattan Project, which enabled us to end World War II.
We had to keep this alien technology secret to be sure it did not fall into the wrong hands. We also felt people were not ready to learn that they were not alone. Mistakes have been made. Let me repeat that line. Mistakes have been made. Certain previous administrations have been heavy-handed in an effort to keep these secrets. I am directing, and then it's garbled here. Maybe it's meant to be garbled here. He's saying, I guess I am directing that this information be immediately declassified. The extraterrestrials mean us no harm. Had they meant to harm us, they could have long ago. Fellow Americans, do not be frightened by Hollywood portrayals of warlike aliens. These extraterrestrials truly are our space brothers. My fellow Americans, this is the most wonderful time in human history. We are not alone. This proves the awesome wonder of God's creation. I now will show you a videotape of an actual extraterrestrial entity. And then we will see an example of our own anti-gravity vehicles, which have been developed with the help of the extraterrestrials. Roll tape. So that's how one man thinks that, as a matter of fact, one man we just spoke to thinks that it may be announced to the world that they are here. One day, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, it may happen very much like that. I frequently wonder how far off that day really is, don't you? Anybody else want to try and be a president announcing to the world that they have arrived? They are here. A squadron of pretty women. That's what I'm looking forward to. That'd be all right, wouldn't it? From Mars, no doubt.
Pretty woman, walking down the street. Pretty woman, the kind I like to meet. Pretty woman, I don't believe you, you're not the truth. No one could look as good as you.
I mean, what if they all came as beautiful women? That'd be it. The planet would be finished.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Try and imagine for a moment. They don't come down with slitted eyes. They don't come down with gray skin or even milky white skin and giant eyes with coverings over the lids, little skinny arms. But they all come down in the form of, oh, I don't know, let's say the MCI girl. That would be it. Planet Earth would be gone. They would take our leaders. Just a different way to think about it. I mean, we always imagine they come down and they look like the one Story Musgrave referred to. These guys really exist. If they could take any form, and they took a form like that, we'd be finished. That's it. The planet would be theirs. Just a thought. I'm Art Bell, and this is the
the final half hour coming up, I suppose.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night, but you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today.
Get a new view of the world with Coast to Coast AM.
At this point, I'm not happy with the direction that government is taking us. I'm happy with the fact that Americans are beginning to wake up and stand up and do what they have to do and shout and scream and blog. And I think that's critical. And I think that's what's going to save the republic. I think in the long run, as we go through all this stuff, it's the people who will save us and our country will remain strong.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM, from July 28, 1997.
Daryl from L.A. writes, of course you know there is a massive difference between Richard Hoagland and this brimstone caller. Richard Hoagland is rational and logical. Between you and me, this caller, if allowed to continue, would have demonstrated a psychotic thought process disorder. Well, he was the guy talking about Cleveland and rock and roll and St. Louis and Israel. And as with Richard Hoagland, if I had had about another hour or two or three or four, we may have finally put it all together, but I didn't have that long, and so with the length of the phone call that he had, which under the circumstances was rather lengthy, in my professional opinion, I didn't understand one word of it. And you are quite right, Daryl, in the case of Richard Hoagland, given enough time, it all does come together. Many listeners don't listen carefully to Richard, and they don't listen long enough to get to the punchline, but when it gets there, it's generally thought to be worth the wait. So that's true, but I had no idea, no earthly idea, where that caller was going. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. Going once, going twice.
Oh, hello. I had a question for you. If you had any information on United States Project the HAARP.
Yes, I know all about it.
Yeah, I just wondering if you could just describe and tell me what the actual function of it is. I've heard.
What do you think it is?
Well, I've heard that it's a device that was created in the early part of the century by a physicist that alters electric magnetic field. And supposedly they're suggesting that it's for defensive reasons, but who knows what it's for?
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Nick Begich knows what it's for. HAARP is not as you described. HAARP is an antenna array in Alaska. We've got photographs of it, as a matter of fact, on my website. If you ever want to go look, just enter HAARP, and I'm sure it'll take you to where there's a photograph of the HAARP antenna arrays. It is an ionospheric heater. That's what it's called. The stated goals of HAARP are testing of communication, and mapping of underground tunnels and bunkers. Now, that, of course, means there would be a very, very great deal of radiation that would start out as a wide signal from Earth, but would focus at the ionosphere. A very incredibly large amount of RF energy at certain frequencies, literally heating, if not punching a hole through the ionosphere. There are people concerned that this will cause weather modification, possibly bio effects on human beings who will experience the
returned radiation from the ionosphere, and I have interviewed some number of times Dr. Nick Begich, who wrote a book called Angels Don't Play This Harp. And maybe it's time we did that again, since many of you apparently are unsure of what harp is and what it isn't. And we don't know for sure whether it will have the effects described as possible by Dr. Begich, but the project is indeed going forward, so we shall see. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, I've been trying to get through for quite a long time there.
Well, now you're through. Where are you calling from?
I can't believe it. What was the discussion on Radio T?
Well, you've been trying desperately to call in, and you don't know what we're talking about?
No, I wasn't listening to what was on the radio.
Then why were you calling?
I was trying to get through anyways.
Why?
That's the main thing.
I mean, why?
Well, for one thing, it's very hard to get through.
What I'm saying is, generally when people, I realize it, when people get through, though, they usually have something on their mind they want to talk about.
Oh, definitely I do. Definitely I do, sir.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I do go by the name of Elvis Aaron Presley, same identical spell as that is.
You go by the name of Elvis Presley?
Yeah. I'm from here, from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
So you're a Canadian version of Elvis Presley.
Yeah, in fact, you know that the 20th anniversary is coming up.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to be celebrating here in the city.
Do you dress up as Elvis? I mean, are you an Elvis, Elvi, one of the Elvi?
Same identical spelling as it is, uh-huh. At Grace Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Right on the tube spelling.
Mm-hmm.
C-L-V-I-S, W-A-R-O-N-P-R-A-S-L-E-Y.
Okay. Why do you do that? Do you do that to just honor him, or?
No, it's all on my birth certificates and everything.
Oh, I see. This is your actual legal name.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. You don't claim, of course, to be the Elvis Presley.
No, I don't. I don't admit that.
You are just a Elvis Presley. Do you sing?
I've had radio stations, back 1982 here in the city that actually put me on hold for a few minutes and actually put them on tape. You know, because they wanted to hear the voice and everything.
Well, so far, though, you don't sound like the Elvis Presley.
Pardon me?
Let me hear your Elvis.
Let me hear this is terrible on telephone.
Well, try it.
Sometimes I can get it, sometimes I can't.
Well, we'll take a chance.
Pretty funny without one, definitely.
I've never heard a Canadian do Elvis, so go ahead, sir, do it.
Never?
Never.
Well, there are other guys around the world that,
I'm sure there are.
Name, but
in the interest,
I don't know if they have the full name.
In the interest of speed and time here, we've got to get to it.
Pardon me?
Do your Elvis.
Kind of shy, definitely.
All right,
I usually do it when I'm on stage.
I see.
I usually do it when I'm on stage.
I see.
That's when I do it.
I'll tell you what, then. I'm about out of time.
Oh?
Out of time. Out of time. Thank you very much for the call. Eastman Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hello, how are you?
Earlier in the show,
yes,
we had somebody come on, and they were talking about the Ark of the Covenant.
That's right.
And how it would be nice to get somebody, a guest, to talk about it.
An expert, yes.
Graham Hancock.
I guess he'd be the one. Graham, of course, you've got to catch him when he's here in the country.
Ah, that's the problem, eh?
It is, because, you're from Canada, aren't you?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you hear that last Canadian?
I wasn't paying much attention to him.
Good for you.
I was wondering if I was going to get through to you. I heard the dial tone, so I sort of turned the radio down.
All right. Anyway.
He was an Elvis impersonator,
I
lost interest right away.
An Elvis wannabe impersonator who got too nervous to even do his Elvis for us.
Oh. But anyway, Graham has written a book about the Ark of the Covenant.
It's called
The Sign and the Seal.
Right.
And if he can't do an interview, he probably knows somebody who could.
Right. Well, maybe we'll... I knew that he had done that, and the problem is I can call Graham in Great Britain, but the delay and the phone connections are so stinky that it makes an interview of substance very difficult. I mean, I don't mind calling Great Britain to do an interview, but for some reason, calling England, I mean, it's easier to call China.
That's funny, because I call England every now and then, and I get perfect.
Do you really?
Yeah, so it must be part of the country, I guess, different sections of the country.
Maybe that's right. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for the suggestion. He's exactly right. The Sign and the Seal by Graham Hancock would be one avenue, one expert to talk to. And we generally get to talk to Graham when he gets in country. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, it's Rand. Moved from Henderson to Boulder City now, so.
Yes, sir.
Did you know that there was a tornado in Kingman yesterday afternoon?
Arizona?
Yeah.
Kingman, Arizona, a tornado?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm not surprised, because I'm sure you heard me talking about the vicious storms that we've had here over the Pahrump Valley.
Yeah.
Last
few
days.
And we had some big storms here in Boulder City, and then I from here I can pick up Kingman Radio, and they had the tornado watch, and then as the storm was moving toward Nevada, they had two more funnel clouds which did not touch down, and they also had a lightning strike at Davis Dam that knocked out half the power for about 6 hours in northern Arizona.
I knew it. I knew something like that was going on. My wife and I were standing outside yesterday morning looking at the cloud formation, looking at this terrible dark thing with a big roll cloud, and I said, "Hun, watch the formations carefully, look for a funnel cloud, because this is exactly the kind of formation that will produce them."
Yep.
And so we're in some pretty stern weather conditions at the moment. I have a feeling it'll be going on all week.
I think so, too, because I listened to, what was WXNO, that 166.55 or whatever it is, Las Vegas.
Right.
And they were talking about up at least until Wednesday.
I think it's 162.550.
That's correct. Yeah, 162.55.
Up through Wednesday, huh?
Yeah.
All right, my friend, thank you. Cross your fingers for me. I already had one lightning strike, and I'm not looking forward to any more. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art. This is John from out in Milwaukee.
Hi, John.
Hi. I'm a ham radio operator out here.
All right, for you.
And I was wondering, do you listen to these guys out on 75 meters on 38945?
38945.
Oh, there's a bunch of them down
38.94.5?
Yeah.
No.
Take a listen down there sometime. I don't know if you'll hear them out there. They're around North Carolina and Tennessee and stuff.
About 3 o'clock in the morning, I bet I could hear them. Why are they...
Oh, just listen to these guys. They're worse than CBers.
Oh, yeah?
If that's possible.
Well, why would I want to listen to that?
Well, I don't like
that kind of stuff going on the ham bands anyway, so I wouldn't listen to that.
I would just think it'd be nice to get these guys off the air. It's just horrible to even listen to these people.
Well, all right, thank you. I'm not interested in listening to that. There's too much of that going on, and the ham bands should be... There's no reason why you can't have a lot of fun on the ham bands, but there is a certain protocol with regard to ham radio that is sadly missing in a lot of the communications going on these days, and I don't really care to spotlight it. If anything, I would hope that it would let up. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, sir. My voice is... I have a partially paralyzed throat. In the 1800s, there was a spaceship that crashed in Texas. I used to have the article, and nobody ever investigates that.
Where in Texas?
Oh, I read this so many years ago, and they even had a funeral. They had a burial plot for them that... I'm sure I wish I could find out. I know somebody must have the article.
Well, when you get it, be sure and send it along to me. I'm not aware of anything. Surely if there was a major incident rivaling or surpassing that of Roswell, 1800s or not, there should be some information about it. So if you get it, pass it on. I'll certainly give it to everybody. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art. The president was to make his announcement. The only way for it to be truly effective is if he stood beside Tom Brokaw and had Tom Brokaw make it for him. Just that's a little suggestion this morning for you, Art.
All right.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. And enjoy the program very much. I wanted to just put out a general inquiry as well as to put it into the form of a question to yourself. If anybody out there has ever had a similar sighting to what myself and the family had on a vacation in North Lake Tahoe about 22 years ago. We were all out on the porch of a cabin that my parents had rented. And since there aren't a lot of lights in that North Tahoe, there was not a lot of glare, and you could see a nice blanket of stars,
sure.
Very clear view.
Sure.
And there was doing what would be a dot-to-dot course between the various stars, just in a methodical way that indicated intelligence.
You mean like something was flitting between the stars, like they were connecting the dots?
Exactly, from one star to the next. But this, we're talking about what had to have been enormous distances, and the whole family saw it. This was not one person that saw it.
Well, and, but you see, you would have no real way of referencing where that object was with respect to the stars. It could have been very close, traveling very short distances, but if you imagine that it was traveling from star to star, it would appear, obviously, to be traveling very vast distances. So you would have to know how far away the object was from you.
Well, right. When you're talking about millions of light years, then depth perception could be a problem. But I don't see how anyone, since we were a relatively anonymous group on the back porch of this cabin, how anyone would have been able to pull off some sort of a stunt where they're just having an object that's in some sort of a lower elevation.
I've got you. Well, they wouldn't. I mean, such flight would be impossible for any conventional craft, obviously.
Right, and I'm just wondering, have you yourself heard of any sort of a sighting like this, or if anybody out there has...
All right, well, we'll throw it to the audience. I certainly haven't, and if I did, I would certainly imagine that I had seen something not of this earth. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Extinguish
your radio, please.
It is distinguished.
All right, good.
Okay, Art, I'm calling to see if I can get some help from a cat expert in interpreting what my cat is up to.
I will try.
Okay. What he does is he grabs this furry toy mouse that I got him,
right.
And he runs through the place, and he makes this sound like the world is coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Completely alarming, but at the same time kind of, hey, I've got something.
Does he sometimes throw it into the air?
He jumps into bed with the mouse,
mm-hmm.
where I'm trying to go to sleep.
Yes.
And he's making these really loud noises from his belly.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is cat enjoyment. Do not stop your cat from enjoying this. Even though these are
uh-huh.
deep, guttural, strange sounds that may worry you, do not stop your cat from doing it. This is pure cat enjoyment.
Oh, it's just play. There's nothing to interpret.
Right. This cat is enjoying himself. He is imagining in his little cat brain
yeah.
that he has a mouse.
Uh-huh.
It is his mouse, and he's
uh-huh.
thinking all kinds of things about it. He's imagining that it's wiggling.
Mm-hmm.
And all that sort of thing. So don't worry about your cat. Your cat is totally normal.
Oh, I was just worried about, I couldn't understand what he's trying to tell me.
He's not trying to, he's really not trying to tell you anything. Now, of course, he brings it to you because your cat loves you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to share his joy at having this wiggling mouse in his grasp.
Oh.
He's trying to share that with you.
Okay.
So these guttural noises that your cat makes, they're just a pure cat joy. Listen, the program is over, and so you, dear lady, are going
yes.
to get the honors. You know.
Okay.
So, do it.
All through the universe, from east to west, from north to south. Good night, y'all.
Yeah, that was east of the Rockies somewhere. Well, I guess that's it. She said it very well. From the high desert. Good night, y'all.